This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Meet me in outer space. We could spend a night, watch the earth come up. I've grown tired of that place. Won't you come with me? We could start a
Place to Be Nation. Welcome to yet another edition of the Sellers Points podcast. And I think we've got a really interesting and certainly unique situation here on the podcast this time, because we're going to be debuting a brand new segment. But before we get to that, of course, I am your host, Russell Sellers, and I'm joined by my illustrious co-host and red ring wearing anger monster, at least for this podcast, Mr. Kelly Poole. How you doing today, buddy?
I'm good.
Don't let him fool you. He's mad. He's supremely pissed off because we're going to be talking about something that just disappointed the hell out of both of us, and that is the 2011 Green Lantern movie. That's right. That's the subject of our very first edition of Rebooked. And if you don't know what that is, you definitely haven't been listening to this podcast or the Hard Traveling Fanboys, where I announced that we were going to be doing this. And essentially, it's a very simple concept. At least I think it's a simple concept, right, Kelly?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, it's pretty straightforward. We're going to take a look at a comic story, a movie, a TV show, something that maybe didn't turn out quite how we hoped it would. And we're going to put our own spin on matters and say this is what didn't work and this is how it could have worked better. And we thought, what better way to kick this off than with the very thing that jumps to the front of our minds every time we think of something that should have been better, and that is that 2011 Green Lantern film. Because I'd say we're both pretty big Green Lantern fans. How would you describe your Green Lantern fandom, Kelly?
Well, I mean, pretty intense. I mean, there's probably not, I have a Green Lantern statue on my desk. I have multiple Green Lantern figures. I have a full power battery. I have Alex. I mean, I have the Golden Age Green Lantern, Alan Scott. I've got Hal Jordan. I've got Guy Gardner as a Red Lantern. And I've got last year I got John Stewart on my arm.
Yep, because you're...
I'll be Kite Lantern to finish up. I've got another arm, my right arm, that has all of the lantern symbols done really nicely. My friend Christy did a sketch, and it was really nice. So I just had that whole thing done on my arm. So I'm definitely a Green Lantern fan. Have been for a very long time. So
yeah, your Green Lantern fandom definitely predates my own. Haha, you're old. I'm kidding with you though, because I'm definitely there myself now. But in any case, I don't have the level of ink that you have, but I do have a very big Green Lantern tattoo made out of box, like it's a body armor and Green Lantern power battery combination on my left arm. That was one I'm particularly proud of, and of course I have a fairly sizable Green Lantern collection that Geoff Johns' run made me a fan, like from the first time I read Rebirth, and then the dozen or so times after that I reread it. That kind of propelled my Green Lantern fandom into the stratosphere and certainly made me a Hal Jordan fan. And it's with that in mind that we fast forward several years, And we get to 2011, and we get that, you know, what we'd all been waiting for, a Green Lantern live-action movie. Now, Kelly, I do want to ask you, like, what was your hype level going into that movie? Like, how excited were you to see it?
I would say fairly high. I mean, there was a lot of talk about this film prior to it coming out and hitting the theaters. So, you know, this was during the time when I had my shop, of course, and there was always a lot of talk about it. I mean, I had a lot of folks that were wanting my opinion, wanting what did I think about the casting, of course, with Ryan Reynolds being the lead. And, you know, I had to basically kind of be real reserve about it. I mean, I think a lot of folks wanted me to just bash that they pick Ryan Reynolds and that they – but I really just – I didn't – you know, I was like, look, I can't say anything because I hadn't seen the film. I mean, I know Ryan Reynolds is a pretty good actor. He's mainly been comical. He's done a lot of comedies. But this may be the chance for him to kind of stretch out and do something else. And he's – you know, he's a likable person. I know why they picked him. I mean, they picked him as name recognition for a lot of reasons why actors are picked for films. They want people – to come in and spend their money. So, I mean, I didn't, you know, I was hyped to see it. I was really, I was looking forward to seeing it. I, you know, I wanted to, you know, like everybody, I just wanted it to be great. You know, I wanted it to be like, you know, the way Iron Man was, you know, so.
And, you know, you could kind of tell that's what they were going for when you watched the movie, that they were, hoping that this was going to be their version, the DC or Warner Brothers version of Iron Man, to kick off that larger universe. But we'll get to that in a second, because it does have a couple of characters that we didn't expect to see in the movie that that kind of lead you to believe that this could go further. But anyway, I was kind of like you. Like, I had been following this, the development of this movie. I was in it, man. Like, I was so hyped to go and see this movie. Went to see it at a midnight showing. I mean, I was already to the point where I would kind of stop doing midnight shows when this movie came out. And, you know, it was me, several friends, and I drugged my then girlfriend with me to see it. And, you know, I won't apologize for a lot about that relationship, but if I could apologize for one thing, that would be it.
Yeah.
I would be like, I am so sorry I drugged you to this at midnight, you know, on a freaking Thursday night. I mean, dear God. And when we walked out of the movie, I tried to convince myself that it wasn't that bad. But the more I thought about it, the worse it got. I was like, no, it was that bad.
Yeah, I think I went to the midnight showing as well with a bunch of friends. So, yeah. I came out of the film exactly like you. I was trying my best to replay it in my mind and be positive, because I had everybody to question me at the very end of the film. I mean, when we're outside standing around in the parking lot, you know, I sitting there kind of wringing my hands going, well, you know, Owo was really good. You know, I mean, Sinestro was spot on. Kilowog was
okay.
Was you know, Kilowog, and you know, I mean, I just
I was like, I liked Tomar Ray, and
yeah.
I liked, you know, I was like, you know, like those parts, but man, everything on Earth was just so bad. And
yeah,
and I rewatched the movie recently to get ready for this, to talk about what we would do differently in the movie. Mm-hmm. And I got to tell you, I know where this happened for me, but I know exactly what moment I knew this movie was in trouble. And it was in the opening credits. that's really bad. But it starts, you know, I think most people remember the movie starts with this voiceover from Tomar Ray, who is voiced by Jeffrey Rush, or Barbossa from Pirates of the Caribbean, if you need a visual. and you don't know that that's who's voicing it over. You just hear the voice, and he's telling you this gigantic info dump of what the Green Lantern concept is. He breaks down the 3,600 sectors, so there's 3,600 Green Lanterns that the Guardians of the Universe mastered the Emerald Light of Willpower and focused it into a weapon. I mean, it's a huge amount of info to just drop all of that concept onto the audience. And as I thought about it later, I just kept thinking, this is the wrong thing to do. I mean, yes, you could point to Star Wars and say, well, Star Wars has this opening crawl that gives you kind of the baseline of the story up to this point so that you don't just go into it completely cold. But I would counter that argument with that opening crawl doesn't give you the entire concept of the Jedi, though. And if we're going to compare the Green Lanterns to another concept out there in pop culture, I would say they're similar in that respect to the Jedi in Star Wars. And to just dump all of that info onto the audience right to begin with, knowing full well that you're going to do it again using the same character later in the movie, is basically saying you have no confidence in the audience's ability to pick up on your concept because even you don't really fully grasp it. And the you in this case being the filmmakers, the writers, and the producers. And as the movie went on, that became more and more obvious. So for me, that was the moment I knew this movie was going off the rails real fast. So what moment was it for you that you kind of knew that it was, that this was in trouble? This was not going well.
I would say for me, it was a little bit further in. I did, you know, after the fact, when I was thinking about the film, I completely agree with what you said that the beginning was let's just dump all this information, and it was just too much at one time. You know, but for me, my part, I think when Hector Hammond and he starts kind of changing because of his exposure to Parallax, or however you want to put it. That's where, for me, I was like, oh man, I do not like this. I do not even remotely want Parallax to even be mentioned. You know, it's too early. So that to me is when I was thinking about the film and going, oh boy, this isn't good.
No, it was not. And it, I mean, they changed a lot of things in the movie from the comic concepts, and Hector Hammond's a pretty big one, but that idea of Parallax, we see that at the very beginning, like right as that big info dump is coming to an end, we get Tomar Ray telling us that, you know, Parallax, the entity of fear, could only be defeated by this one Green Lantern, the greatest of them all, Abin Sur. And I'm like, okay, that's cool. I'm glad that Abin Sur is being given such high praise. But then when we see him in the movie, he kind of has his ass handed to him by this entity that he had defeated off screen earlier. And we're led to believe that he did it single-handedly.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm not really getting the idea that Abin Sur was the greatest Green Lantern of them all, because I don't see him doing anything other than getting murdered.
Yeah.
By what I could only describe as a diarrhea cloud.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we're supposed to be believing is Parallax. And as a longtime DC fan and someone who was there when the issue came out that showed Parallax in all his giant dragon-like glory, all I could think was no. Diarrhea cloud, no. And Diarrhea Cloud with a Guardian head on it. I'm sorry. I don't know who thought this was a good idea, but maybe they were the same people involved with the second Fantastic Four movie? Yeah, remember how Galactus turned out in that? Yeah, yeah. Similar kind of bullshit happened here. But I digress. That is a concept that shouldn't have even been in the movie. Like the idea that Abin Sur would have defeated Parallax. Now, I mean, come on, stop. No. What they should have done from the very beginning was showed us an Abin Sur being a really good Green Lantern. Like, show him being a space cop. That's what they are. That's what the Green Lanterns are. That's their whole idea. That's the whole point of their existence, is to keep peace. They're peacekeepers in the universe. So, space cops, show them out there doing that job. And I personally think, like, if I were putting my own spin on this story, I would have had Abin Sur, like, tracking down some alien gunrunners, you know, who are, like, maybe have been mining out a new ore that could possibly target the Green Lantern specifically. You know, a little yellow rock, if you will.
Yeah.
And there you go. And, of course, if I were to say which aliens are they, and just to make Green Lantern nerds geek out a little bit whenever they see them, have it be the Quartians. Have them mining out a yellow rock and not have them necessarily be the antagonist here, but have them, like, in contact with someone off-screen. Kind of like how, you know, in Episode 1 when Darth Maul is in contact with, as we all know, it was Palpatine. We all know it was the Emperor. And I would think that Green Lantern nerds around the spectrum would pick up on the idea that they're probably talking to Sinestro, who's playing everything from behind the scenes, but trying to play both sides. You know, trying to keep his real intentions hidden so that he can put his master plan of betraying the Guardians or exposing the Guardians for something horrible that they did, you know, a little bit later. It's a much simpler concept, at least I think so. I mean, if you want to, you know, get into plot and you want to have at least some complexities in there. But it doesn't allow, I mean, but that's not an overly complex idea. But the ideas of Parallax and the larger emotional spectrum, these are not things that the audience needs thrown at them all at the beginning. They should be given time to adjust to the idea that willpower itself could be focused, you know, into a weapon or into you know, an energy source. I mean, you have a light side and a dark side to the Force. That's all they really should have been introduced to in this movie, is the willpower, and maybe the idea that a yellow light does exist, but hasn't been harnessed. The idea of the fear entity, that should never have factored into this movie whatsoever.
Yeah.
But one thing I do think should have, Manhunters. I think the weapons that these Quartians are smuggling should have been revealed to be Manhunter androids. One specifically.
Mm-hmm.
At least this first one, trying to get that sucker to work. And the yellow rock wasn't the weapon itself. It was the power source for these Manhunters, or at least it could be. And you kind of take it and you run from there. But that's what it needed. That's what the movie needed. It needed a simpler concept, something that could be a little bit more grounded, or at least something a little more in-focused.
Yeah.
But I think maybe the biggest problem this movie has is not necessarily in its plot, because I think we can take a look at Marvel movies, and tell me if you disagree with this. Does it kind of seem like a lot of them don't really have the strongest plots in the world?
Yeah. I mean,
but
a little bit. Yeah, a little bit. Yeah.
So, but they do something so incredibly right that the DC movies, even going back to this Green Lantern movie specifically, did not do. Those Marvel movies put characters first. They build their characters up and they make you care about them.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no doubt in your mind within the first like 20 minutes of Iron Man, you're kind of invested in Tony Stark. I mean, he's a likable douchebag. And you want to keep watching him. You're not really worried so much about the larger plot that's happening around him. You want to watch him. You want to enjoy this character. And that's where this Green Lantern movie, at least in my estimation, completely fails. It was like the filmmakers were so scared that people wouldn't get the plot of the movie that they kept trying to reiterate what the plot was, and they completely forgot that, oh yeah, this is a story with characters in it.
Mm-hmm.
You're supposed to be building them up to something. And they didn't do it. At least in my view, they didn't do it.
No, I mean, they didn't. It's like I said earlier, this movie is just a huge mess.
And it's like I was saying, like you need to show us, and it's a show. This is the movie business. I mean, it's a visual medium. It's show, don't tell. But that opening, at least to me, you know, you want to start as late as you can in your story. At least that's one school of thought. I mean, there's another school of thought that says linear storytelling works better. I can see it from both sides, but I think it actually works a little bit better if we start in space. Like, if we start seeing the Green Lanterns, like, working and doing their jobs. And the only reason I say that is because if you want to introduce people to these concepts like the actual movie does, you want to show them that, from the beginning, this is a sci-fi action film. That's what it's going to be. That's what you signed up for. Yes, there will be human characters in it, but you are going to be in space seeing aliens and all sorts of crazy stuff throughout a good bit of this movie, so you might as well get used to that from the very beginning. So, yeah, start with Abin Sur. Show him, like, busting up some gun-running rings and show him being good at it, you know? Like, illustrate to us that this guy is damn good at his job. And that it takes something truly special or something truly horrific to bring him down. And I wouldn't even have it happen right at the beginning with. I would have him defeat those gunrunners, like, take them in. Like, he's captured their ship. He's going to bring the whole thing in to Oa and be like, I think there's something bigger going on here. Hey, I'm going to call up my buddy Sinestro and be like, hey, there's something really crazy happening here. I think I've stumbled onto something way bigger than either of us could have imagined. I'm going to bring this in, and we're going to talk about it. And we're going to bring it to the Guardians and say, this is a big deal. I think we should be investigating this further. So, you know, something like a good cop would do.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I'd go with it. And then, of course, have the Manhunter activate itself, or seemingly self-activate on board the ship, as it's coming close to our solar system. Like, you can see that it's like, have the ship like passing through our solar system or something as that Manhunter is waking up. And that's when you flip over to Earth and show Hal Jordan, like, have us meet him. Now, I wouldn't necessarily let's have Hal waking up in bed next to some, you know, random unnamed blonde. Though that's not out of character for Hal Jordan in any way. That's totally something he would do. And especially younger Hal Jordan. But I would have had him, you know, if you want to have him, you know, wake up like that, if you want us to have that be our first encounter with Hal Jordan, okay, fine. But, I mean, I could go either way on it. I could say, you know, maybe have him in the middle of a test flight and really screwing it up, kind of like how they have him in Green Lantern Secret Origin.
Yeah.
You know, he definitely screws up a piece of equipment and punches out a superior officer as a result. I mean, he's in the Air Force at the time in the book, but you know, there are different things that you could do there. There are different directions that you could take with Hal's initial intro. But I also like the idea of him, you know, like, you know, I guess you could skip over to the part where instead of us going through the whole Ferris Air like subplot from Green Lantern Secret Origin, you could kind of keep it like it already is in the movie. Like Carol already owns the company. They're trying their best to get these, you know, contracts to test out new fighter pilots for the Air Force. But I think one thing that would have helped the movie a little bit, at least this is just my personal opinion, but I think that Hal's flashbacks with his dad should have had a little bit more context to them. Like we should have seen a bit more of it. And we should have seen Hal's dad saying something along the lines of, you know, this whole test pilot thing is really just the stepping stone to what I really want to be. And that's an astronaut, and have that be Hal's ultimate goal. Like, yes, he loves flying. He's a speed demon. He loves it, but he wants to go to space. Yeah. He wants to fly higher than anybody ever has. You know, that's something he wants to do. And now these new planes, these new fighter jets that they're testing, give them the ability to do that. Like you can dogfight in space or dogfight in low orbit. Now that could be something that would be cool and would have him have a moment where, you know, of course we all know that the Manhunter and Abin Sur are going to get into it on the ship. Manhunter's going to wind up kind of winning that fight, but wind up kind of messed up himself. And as both things wind up crashing to Earth, Hal would be flying around in space, get distracted, see this streak of ship, like this alien ship, like crashing in front of him, and it's going to trip him out. You know, he's going to be like, "Am I hallucinating? Is this for real?"
Yeah.
That's just me, you know, spitballing. That's just one, you know, direction that you could go to have a pretty cool action scene right from the get-go, right from the jump. And of course, Hal's going to screw up that test flight, and he's going to wind up being fired, or at least being grounded. He's not going to be able to, you know, go back up. One scene I really like in Green Lantern Secret Origin is when they're moving this this old junker, like this old wrecked plane, out from like a storage area. Like they were gonna finally move it and use it for scrap parts. And it's the plane that Hal's dad died in. And Hal has that moment where he's like, you know, before they take it away, he wanted to go and sit in it one last time. And it's in that moment when he's sitting in that plane that he's summoned by the ring.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that would have been far more effective than him being grabbed away from his nephew's birthday party, which I think is one of the most awkward scenes in the movie.
Yeah, yeah.
That scene really, it bugs the hell out of me. I don't know why, because there's parts of it that I like seeing his interaction with his brothers and with his nephew.
Mm-hmm.
But for some reason, I think it's the ending. I think it's because that's where he gets snatched away. That's the thing that bothered me the most. But what did you think would have made that better? Or what did you think of having the ship that Abin Sur was in crash in what Hal describes as a swamp, but it looks more like a beach. And it's definitely like a beach in New Orleans, because that's where they filmed the movie.
Yeah.
But that feels weird to me, because I always think of Coast City as being more like, yes, it's on the coast, but there's a lot of desert out there too.
Mm-hmm. You know, my thoughts on a lot of that as far as the Abin Sur moment, it was good to see the interaction, you know, and I don't have a problem with the way they pretty much presented Abin Sur, but like you said earlier, and it still kind of sticks in my mind, it's something I agree with, is that they poorly portrayed him as a Lantern, and that kind of messes with the whole process of the passing the ring on to Hal for me, you know. The location, I agree with you too. I think that, you know, I think it's always been in most of the retellings of his origin is that it is a desert or desert-ish type environment that Aventur brings him to. So that's another issue, like you said, that really doesn't it doesn't sit well. It's, I mean, changes like that don't have to be made. I mean, it's just like the changes they made in Iron Man were all they didn't change the origin story. They just changed the up the timeline from, you know, from it being the Vietnam conflict to the modern day conflict with terrorist, you know, in the Muslim countries. So
but they didn't reinvent the wheel.
They didn't reinvent the wheel. They just, you know, they just changed who the villains were because of the – they just updated it. You know, they weren't going to make Iron Man a period piece where they would set it back and during the Vietnam conflict. Yeah. That wouldn't have worked. That would have been probably bad for them. So they just went with the you know, modern – with what we're dealing with now in the modern age. So
And yeah, they found that happy medium, and it worked out really well. And you know, there are a lot of concepts in the Green Lantern movie that you could tell they tried to pull it out of the comics, but maybe they didn't fully get it. And one of those, like, just aesthetically speaking, I had a lot of reservations about the idea of a mocap suit. I get why they wanted to go there. But it really didn't work on screen. And watching it again recently, man, it looks bad.
I was never – that was the one thing when I heard that they were doing a CGI costume. I just – that was the one thing that bothered me prior to going and seeing it was – I was like, why can't you just do a traditional costume? I mean, the way costumes are made now, I mean, you don't have to make it completely, you know, you could do some alterations to it, but God, I mean, you've done Superman, you've done Batman, two of the most iconic characters, you've made costumes for them, and they look great. Give, you know, fucking give Kyle, give Hal the fucking same treatment. I mean, Hal. Sorry.
This is what that movie does to Kelly. He's so completely flustered that he's losing his words.
This whole let's make a CGI costume and we'll – no. They all look dumb. They look completely shitty. And when he first manifested his costume and I hated the way their lantern looked. I was like, why can't you just make a traditional lantern like the way they fucking look in the comic? It's not fucking rocket science. We had to make it alien-ish looking. It looks like a fucking lamp you get at fucking IKEA or some shit. I mean, it was just fucking stupid.
It did look really weird. Design wise, the only thing that really bugged me was the look of the ring. Like I did not like the ring at all. I was like, you know, you look at the ring that's in the comic, especially in the in Green Lantern Secret Origin, where they seem to pull several of their concepts for this movie from. All of that is just so much better, and the lantern even looks, to me, it does look a little alien because nobody, you know, wields around a lantern that looks like that.
I mean, every I know that like every lantern kind of can kind of modify. Of course, they can modify their costume, their uniform. They can modify everything about, you know, because they have that ring. They could do whatever they want to. But Hal has always had this traditional lantern and the ring. It's just like we said earlier. The wheel. You don't have it. It's fine. You don't have to mess with it. You know, it's not like they took. Tony's armor and decided, well, you know, it's always been golden and red. Let's flash it up. Let's do a mauve and maybe a taupe or something. They didn't do that shit. You know, it started out as a gray big giant suit, which was just like it was in the comics. Then he started doing the Mark versions and started making them sleeker and more, you know, he said, let's put some, you know, red in there too. And let's flash it up.
The looks of the costumes should definitely go more traditional, more towards their comic book sources. Only change them whenever you've got a costume that's just so outrageously silly it would never work on screen. But Green Lantern's costume is not one of those.
No, it's not. I mean, it's black, it's green, there's white gloves, I mean, there's a domino mask. There's nothing there that can't be created. Like I said, they created a really cool costume for Superman Returns for Brandon Ralph. They've done excellent jobs in creating Batman costumes for Ben Affleck and, you know, his predecessor, Christian Bale. You could do the same stuff, the same techniques. To me, that's lazy. That is just lazy.
Yep, I feel very much the same way that you do. It doesn't work. Like, the whole thing doesn't work. But as far as, like, what they were getting wrong with the characters is they never gave us an opportunity to really, like, connect with them. You know? Mm-mm. And by even Hal, who is the central focus of the movie, I feel like we don't really spend any real time with him. Like, he's thrown into all these crazy concepts and, like, all these amazing things are happening around him, but we don't get much of a sense of who he is. He's just kind of like generic white stand-up superhero, whatever.
That's they rushed everything. That's the biggest problem, is they packed too much into it. So we're bouncing from concept to concept to concept, and we don't have a time to really sit there and digest it and go, oh, that's pretty cool, I like that. And then, you know, let's go a little bit and we'll go on in something else. You know, you've got to give your audience time to kind of absorb what you just saw. And it just doesn't do that.
And, you know, the whole movie, like, even the extended cut of the movie, yes, there is an extended cut of this movie, still clocks in at under 2 hours long. That's including the 10 minutes of credits. It's like, it's not a long movie at all. And I'm like, okay, I applaud you for not making an epically long superhero movie, and yet you still put enough plot in there for like two or three films. And that was the whole movie's problem. And like we've said before, like, you take Parallax out of the picture completely and replace it with, like I suggested, like, the accordion's a yellow rock that apparently can harm Green Lanterns, and an old weapon recovered by this alien group who are, you know, trying to make more of them. They want to recreate these things. They want to create a Manhunter army. And you build off of that. You have, of course, the same, like, or a similar training sequence like you had in the movie, because Hal does need to spend a good bit of time on Oa learning how to use the ring and introducing us to other Green Lanterns like Kilowog, like Tomar Ray, like Sinestro. And one thing that I would like to have seen personally is a little bit of Hal and Sinestro having a bit of that back and forth, you know, having that whole, like, banter with each other, not really getting along. But then as the movie progresses, as we go along, Hal earns Sinestro's begrudging respect. We kind of get that in the movie, but it makes no sense. Like, why would Sinestro even respect Hal at that point? Like, sure, he did this, like, amazing thing at the end somehow in a fashion that doesn't really make any sense whatsoever. That still just bugs me to this day, and it's always going to. But I think the thing that bugs me the most about this movie, rewatching it recently, is it is crushingly dull. During the times when Hal is not on Oa, that movie feels like it drags on. I know it's under 2 hours, but it felt like a 2.5 hour movie. I was like, oh my God, this cannot be the Green Lantern movie that they thought would work. I mean, who would have made this and said, yeah, audiences are totally going to eat that up. It's going to be a huge hit. And no, it wasn't. It's a snooze fest. I swear I had trouble staying awake. But you know, one character I think that they got absolutely wrong, like the character that they totally missed on, other than Parallax, was Hector Hammond.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. And watching this movie again, wow. Wow, did they swing and a miss. I mean, they made him into like this, a biologist of sorts. They never really get like deep into that. It's almost like theoretical biology. So they're like, ooh, come study this dead alien. And I'm like, no, that's not what he does. Hector Hammond in Secret Origin, and Hector Hammond traditionally has been portrayed as an astrophysicist who specializes in alternative fuel sources and theoretical fuel sources. Like this guy, I mean, it makes all the sense in the world that he would be someone who's working very closely at Ferris Air, who would have a strong connection to Carol. And according to the film, he, Hal, and Carol grew up together. They are supposed to know each other like old childhood chums.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't really get much of that. There's one scene at the party scene that also features the worst action sequence in the entire movie. Race car track. Everybody who's seen the movie, you're going to know that shit. It's fucking dumb. And it's so terrible now. I can't even watch it. But there's a scene where Hal and Hector see each other and it feels like it might have actually been the first time that Ryan Reynolds and the guy's name escapes now, but the actor who plays Hector Hammond, it feels like that might have actually been the first time they ever met. And it comes across in the performance because it's like, oh, hi, Hector. Hi, Hal. Nice weather we're having, right? Yeah, it's good. It's like, do you two have history together? Because you certainly don't have any on-screen chemistry. There's nothing there. It's like you have less chemistry with Ryan Reynolds than Blake Lively does. And that's saying something. Especially considering she married him later. But, yeah. It was like that future husband and wife team. No chemistry on screen. But then again, Blake Lively was trying to outdo Natalie Portman, who also phoned in a performance in Thor. It's kind of a running neck and neck. Like, who phoned it in worse? Actually, I'm going to give that one to Blake Lively. Just watching this movie, I was like, dear God, there's not one even halfway good moment with her in this movie. She did not care what she was doing. She was there to get paid. And it showed in every horribly delivered line.
Yeah.
But I think you and I are on the same page with Hector Hammond there, that it made no sense for him to be this like guy who's studying the dead alien body. Like, yeah, take the dead alien body away and have Hector concentrate on, oh, what's this machine that was inside the crashed alien spacecraft? It has an interesting thing going on. Oh, look, it's a Manhunter. And it has that yellow rock inside that Hector could be exposed to. And boom, he's got his telepathy abilities. But more so than that, I think we should have been treated to a little bit more of that flashback scenes, or at least a few flashback scenes, showing us young Hal, Carol, and Hector actually being friends. So that we can kind of get an idea that these three did know each other. They do have a history, you know, build these characters as people that we should care about in some way. That the movie just fails to do that at every possible turn. And by the end of it, when you see, spoiler alert, Hector Hammond being killed by Parallax, you'll just kind of be like, eh. That was my reaction to it. What was yours?
It's the same. I thought Hector Hammond originally is a good choice for a villain. Would have been if he was done properly and in no way have connection to Parallax. I mean, just have him as a villain stand on his own and not be some puppet to Parallax, who, as I said before, had no business being in this first film.
And he,
you know, I mean, if done correctly, Hector Hammond would have been a great villain because he's a great villain in the comics. They could have done that on the big screen if they had just done him properly.
Yeah, there's cool scenes all throughout Green Lantern Secret Origin when, like, right after Hector gets his powers, he has no control over his telepathic abilities and he causes people's heads to explode because he can't make their thoughts stop. I'm like, okay, well, that might be a little graphic for the film side, but there are ways around it. I mean, he could be giving people aneurysms or something, like having people drop dead. And he slowly, you know, is driven insane by his powers. But one thing that I think they should have shown was he shouldn't have been so damn creepy looking in the movie. I mean, that's another thing that bothered the hell out of me was like, okay, you're trying to make him this parallel to Hal Jordan. I get that. So at the time that Hal's off training on Oa, you should have Hector like discovering these telepathic abilities or trying to get them under control. But when you're first introduced to him, he's this slimy looking, like straight up creepy. You wouldn't. This is the kind of guy that if you raided his home and looked into his computer, you would not be at all surprised to find some, well, let's just call them illegal contraband pictures on his laptop. That's the impression I get from the Hector Hammond in this movie. And I'm like, that is not Hector Hammond. He should have been, you know, he should have been right there at the, right there from the beginning. Like I said, helping out with maybe a new plane that's using this new fuel source or, you know, new tech that he himself designed. You know, he's trying to impress Carol. He's trying to woo her, if you will. Basically, he's Hal's competition as well as being his buddy. You know, they apparently they would both have had feelings for Carol. And while Hal's trying to break her out of her shell, Hector is trying to put her in his. You know, you're trying to create this the dichotomy between these two opposing forces. And having one of them being able to, you know, manifest his will through a ring and the other just being able to do it by using these out of control mind powers that he's gotten. I mean, it's a good like back and forth dichotomy between the two. But they don't do that. Like they had this opportunity right there to focus in and to hone in on a really good concept and they just completely missed the ball. And of course, Hector with the ability to dive into people's minds would be really detrimental to even more experienced Green Lanterns like, say, Sinestro, who wouldn't be able to touch the guy if the guy is able to get in his head.
Yeah.
And, like, hurt his brain, like, really, like, crush his mind, like, make all his fears come to life. That's, at least that's the concept that I would have had in my mind. You don't need Parallax, but yet you still introduce the idea that fear can cripple the Green Lantern ring. So, that's, in kind of a very basic nutshell, how I would have rebooked the basic concepts and the story of Green Lantern, the 2011 Green Lantern film. Kelly, what is there something that you would have added to this movie or taken away other than what we've talked about?
Like I said before, if I had anything to take out of the film or take away from it, would have been the whole Parallax subplot. I would have just axed that and done away with it because it, you know, traditionally, if you look at films that are, you know, have a superhero or superhero films, you know, having multiple villains, you know, that's always like for the second or third film, they kind of start throwing in more villains. But for the first film, you really just need a standard standalone kind of villain that you know, is one that you have to build up and give people a reason to not like. Just like you have to do the hero, you have to kind of build both of them up during that first film. And like I said, I felt the parallax part was just detrimental to the film and detrimental to Hector Hammond as a character. You know, it took away from him.
And yeah, I completely agree. And it's so frustrating because you know that there's so much in this Green Lantern mythology that lends itself to film, and you know that it could be a good film series. And it's like, why would you not just take a look at the work that's already been done and build off of that? And just trust people, trust the audience to be on board with your concept. I mean, George Lucas and the producers of Star Wars, they went in with a lot of blind trust in the audience, and they were rewarded for it. The audience picked up on it. They got it. I mean, there are people out there who didn't get Star Wars, who still don't. I mean, they're a minority, but they exist. But you know what? Star Wars isn't for them. And you know what? Green Lantern's not going to be for everybody. So if you start overthinking it and start worrying about how do we get it across to even, like, you know, the most unlikely of fans, then you've already completely overthought your concept and you probably shouldn't be trying to make the movie.
Yeah.
But we'll get into the more technical problems that the movie had in the second half. And we're also going to talk about some things that we actually liked about the movie, because believe it or not, as much as we trash it here in this first part, there are actually some good things happening in the movie. Believe it or not. It's crazy, right? But we'll talk about that more in just a little bit. So, guys, don't go anywhere. We're not done rebooking this thing. We're going to come back and we're going to talk about the better side of this movie. And we might even have an idea or two of who would have made for a better director for the movie instead of the guy we got. So, don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Voice of Ring of Honor's Kevin Kelly here. I just want to make sure you're all subscribed to all of our great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. Now, it's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search for and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation Wrestling Feed, Place to Be Nation Pop Feed, Pro Wrestling Only Feed, and, of course, the Kevin Kelly Show Feed, which includes the full archives of my podcast. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And of course, as always, enjoy all the great action of Ring of Honor Wrestling and everything presented to you on PlaceToBeNation.com.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rizzero here, and I want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com, and we offer them to you across two great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation Wrestling feed, you can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast with our famous Vintage Wall pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with the smash hit Clotheslines and Headlines, our steady veteran main event, and the beloved monthly pay-per-view reaction shows with immediate feedback on all pro wrestling super shows. Relive wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series led by Ben Morse, the always contentious Dangerous Alliance podcast, and Survey Says, a fun look back at the good, bad, and ugly of WCW. On our very popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, NBA Team, Lucha Undead, Geek and Sassy, and a veritable podcast heaven for comic fans with hard-traveling fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, and Imaginary Stories. Subscribe to both of those feeds on iTunes and rate and leave feedback for us as well. All of these shows plus others available at PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping, and download our free Place to Be Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks via the links on the right-hand side of our site. We also want to thank our friends at Bone Boneheads, Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, thehistoryofwrestling.com, and Scott Keats' Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceofNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
The PWO PTBN feed has changed its name, now known simply as Pro Wrestling Only, so it should be easier to find and indeed to say. All of your favorite shows are still here, including Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Kayfabe, Titans of Wrestling, Tag Teams Back Again, This Week in Wrestling, and many, many more, including our full archives of tremendous content. So make sure you subscribe to the Pro Wrestling Only feed today.
Welcome back, Place to Be Nation Pop listeners. You have stuck with us through the first half of this first edition of Rebooked Green Lantern, the 2011 film. That's right, we are giving our ideas on what could have made that movie better. And in this second half, we're going to do something a little different, because if you were with us throughout the entire first half, you know that we had a lot of negative things to say about that movie and some ideas that we think would have made it better. But this time, we're going to mention a few things that maybe didn't completely suck about the film. And I think that there's one thing that Kelly and I absolutely agree on that did not suck in the 2011 Green Lantern movie. And that was Mark Strong as Sinestro.
Yes.
Kelly, what were your thoughts on his performance, his portrayal of probably the most iconic Green Lantern character next to Hal Jordan?
I really thought that, you know, after the bumpy ride that the Green Lantern movie was, and up until that point when we finally saw him, that was one of the highlights to me. That was like a moment where I actually thought, oh, okay, maybe the film's going to, I mean, this is great. Maybe the film will continue to be, you know, at this level. And of course it wasn't, but, seeing him, I mean, it was perfect casting, and you know, the makeup and, I mean, I didn't like any of the CGI costumes, but I mean, aside from that, I'm not going to take that away from him. He did a great job. He did an excellent job portraying, Sinestro and giving us a little glimpse into, you know, the kind of rigid, stoic character that he was prior to becoming, you know, prior to kind of falling from grace to an extent. It felt very Darth Vader-ish in a way, where he just kind of fell, you know, but you could kind of see it in his performance.
Yeah, like
the frustration was there.
And that was one thing I really liked. I loved his frustration with the Guardians. His frustration with Hal, it's like you could tell that in his mind, Sinestro knows best. And
yeah,
every bit of that was present in the performance. And I was like, man, this is straight out of the comic. This guy is killing it. Just absolutely nailing this. And I hate it so much that he's surrounded by such a dull-ass movie.
Yeah.
Because he was really bringing it. Like, he encapsulated the character of Sinestro to the point where I was like, I don't see Mark Strong. All I see on that screen right now is Sinestro. Kind of like, this is not the greatest, like, comparison, I guess, because I'm going to compare him to an actor from a movie that's far superior to this one in every possible way. But the way he disappeared into Sinestro reminded me a lot of how Heath Ledger disappeared into the Joker. There was, you didn't see the actor anymore. You only saw the character.
Yeah.
And to me, that was the mark of someone who really captured the essence of what they were doing. And, you know, looking back on it, Hal and Abin Sur are the only Green Lanterns in the entire movie that are not completely CGI'd. Every other lantern is. So they're all wearing motion capture suits. And the actor that played Abin Sur and the actor that and Mark Strong played Sinestro still had to wind up going through hours and hours of makeup. And it's like, you know, they went to all that trouble, but they couldn't make us a suit?
Yeah.
It's just... the level of frustration is just, you know, beyond measure at times. But I digress, because that performance was just so good. And, you know, the end of the movie, I kind of feel like they did him a little bit of a disservice, though. You know, with the whole... He convinces the Guardians to forge a yellow ring, and he himself witnesses Hal Jordan defeat Parallax. He witnesses Willpower overcoming the very entity of fear, and yet he still feels like he has to put on a yellow ring at the end. It was like, dude, you just saw Willpower defeat fear. Why do you even want to bother with that yellow ring anymore? What's your problem? It was one of those scenes that just... By the time, when it happens as a mid-credit scene, it's like, that doesn't even make sense. You only did that to see if you could get, comic book nerds to geek out a little bit, but as far as it being something that makes sense within the story, it's like, well, that's dumb. You actually managed to have Sinestro putting on a yellow ring be dumb. Congratulations, Martin Campbell. Speaking of that, you're familiar with Martin Campbell's other work, right?
No.
He directed Casino Royale.
Never saw it.
The Legend of Zorro.
Never saw it.
And GoldenEye.
Okay, I did see that.
So he's rebooted Bond twice. Once with Pierce Brosnan, once with Daniel Craig. And he did... I think he did both Zorro movies, one of which was really good, and the other one was just a big old pile of crap. But the thing is, he's a capable action movie director, so I totally get why they hired him to do this movie. But when you watch the making of stuff, and then you see more so, you just watch the movie, it really feels like sci-fi was not this guy's forte. He should not have been involved in this movie. I mean... It's bad enough that it went through like four rewrites, but wow,
yeah, that's bad.
When you heard about that, like, what did you think of that? Whenever you heard that this movie went through like four or five rewrites before it finally got to screen,
it didn't surprise me. I mean, after seeing the film, finding out that, you know, it went through that many rewrites. I was like, well, it doesn't surprise me after what I saw on the screen. You know, I mean, it's like, they should have did a fifth, or maybe they should have just burned what it was and just started over. You know,
you hear that, folks? That anger is the red ring taking over Kelly. It's replacing his heart right now.
It doesn't help that I'm on my fourth drink tonight.
Let the hate flow through you.
Yeah.
As much as like the beer is gonna like flow through our bladders as we go along. But anyway,
this is Jack and Coke. This is my fourth one tonight.
You have to be drinking whenever you're talking about this.
Let me go ahead and make this apparent. Russell took one for the team and rewatched Green Lantern. Mm-hmm. I refuse to, because it is etched in my mind what a horrible film, or, you know, just what a lackluster film this was. And I, you know, after I saw it, I kind of told myself, I said, you know what? It's not worth rewatching, because I had, there's a few times when it first came on a DVD, I thought, well, maybe I'll buy it. And I was, you know, a little optimistic. And then I had a chance to kind of recover and go, no, no, I'm not going to do it. It's subpar. It's not worth it. I mean, I mean, there are films that I would rewatch before I would, you know, rewatch this film. And, you know,
quick question: would you sooner watch the Green Lantern film, or would you rewatch the 2005 Fantastic Four movie?
I'd watch that FF film in a heartbeat.
Damn.
In a heartbeat, I would even watch the second one.
Damn. You know? But would you watch the 2015 one?
No. I would have to be really drunk to even start the credits. And hopefully I drank enough that I would have passed out by the credits, you know, starting up. And well,
clearly four Jack and Cokes was not enough to get you there for the 2015 Fantastic Four movie.
No, it's not. I have a fairly high tolerance. That's a whole, I mean, we can't rebook that thing. No, there's no rebooking that, but
I might give that a try. I will say challenge accepted.
I would rewatch the Fantastic Four, the first two films, because you know what, regardless of how crappy they were, to some degree, for me, they were a little entertaining. You know, there were a few entertaining moments. Chris Evans as Johnny Storm was probably one of the highlights, because he really kind of encapsulated Johnny Storm.
Are any of us going to be mad about seeing more of Jessica Alba? I'm not going to be mad at that.
Well, I mean, she went to the phone-it-in school that, you know, Blake Lively and, you know, Natalie Portman did, and because she really didn't. I've read interviews with her, and that film process was really not that great for her, you know.
It didn't sound like it, but we still got more emotion out of her, like more like feeling genuine emotion out of her than we ever did out of Natalie Portman or Blake Lively. Oh,
yeah, that's true. But I digressed a bit. But yeah, I mean.
In other words, folks, in order to get through any of these movies, we have to be drinking. Even if we're just talking about it, we're not even watching the movie. We just have to keep a steady flow of alcohol, because that's what it takes.
I hadn't, you know, it was one of those things that, yeah, the more I thought about it as we were approaching tonight's podcast, I thought to myself, you know, I got to work tomorrow, but I was like, I got to talk about Green Lantern, the movie tonight. Okay, I'll just be hungover tomorrow. I don't give a fuck. You know, there's no.
And now Kelly's taking one for the team.
There is no talking about this film sober, because.
Let's talk about one other thing about the movie that actually was good, and that was pretty much all the scenes on Oa.
Yeah.
But once they get to Oa, and you see the layout of the place, like the big design of it. Like, I loved their design of Oa. I loved just seeing all the, like, the training stuff that Hal was going to go through. Though I do kind of think that during that training session, he shouldn't have been the only Lantern that Kilowog was training. He should have been going through, like, boot camp.
Yeah, there should have been a few other aliens there that he was running through to make it feel more of, like, you know, like you said, a boot camp. The other thing that I didn't particularly – I mean, I loved everything on Oa except for the very high chairs and the table and stuff that the Guardians were sitting around. I thought that was a little like, come on. You're all short. You have these huge huge chairs that you're sitting in. Come on. Just stop it and just have a regular, you know, do the Jedi Temple thing and everyone have the same kind of chair you're sitting in or whatever.
I do kind of wish they would have identified one of them as Ganthet as well, and Saeed. Yep. Like that would have been cool. Like if we would have seen both of them and had at least like those two sound like the voices of reason among the other Green Lantern, or at least you know the antithesis of voices of reason. I guess just give them a personality instead of all of these Guardians sitting around just being like. I mean, yes, the Guardians are supposed to be largely unlikable little douchebags, but you could have had at least two of them have you know more personality and be like. Have some like way of connecting to the audience that would have helped.
Yeah, that would have helped out tremendously if Ganthet would have been mentioned. And of course, Ganthet as a Guardian has always kind of been the outcast, not so much outcast, but he's always kind of gone against the grain because he is a little emotional. He is someone that's willing to kind of say, that's dumb. Why are we doing that? And what are you questioning us for? I mean, no, because we're being dumb. I mean, and that's Ganthet. You know?
How cool would it have been for Ganthet to, you know, take an interest in the very first human Green Lantern?
Right.
You know, be like, I'm very curious about this creature because we've always kind of guarded against the idea of humans being in the Green Lantern ranks because they always seem so emotionally unstable. They always seem like they had every light of the emotional spectrum just beaming out of them to the degree that we didn't think any of them could focus on one. And to see one make it into the Green Lantern ranks is a curious event. It's something that, you know, knowing how Ganthet has been portrayed in comics, he would have been genuinely curious. He would have been, he would have followed Hal around, or at least kind of like shadowed him a little bit, and maybe even given him a little inspirational talk that said, you know, they've always said that humans couldn't be part of the Green Lantern Corps because you were too overly emotional, and I think that that's actually what could make you the best Green Lantern, because you have the ability not only to overcome fear and master willpower, but humans have this indomitable spirit of hope inside them.
Yeah.
And you embody all of that, so it would have been like a little, just, that would have been like a little nugget, a little tease for Green Lantern fans to say, oh shit, he is hinting at the idea that he could be starting up the Blue Lantern Corps. You know, just
and even have Saeed with him, you know, to kind of be another voice. I mean, just having those two named Guardians, because there's really not any – there's not a whole lot of Guardians that have name recognition, you know, to be honest. And not having Ganthet even mentioned in the film – that was the other thing. I was just like, when we're watching the OA section, I was like, come on, where's Ganthet? Come on, someone's got, you know. And when that didn't happen, I was just, that was just another, like, you know, moment for me.
Yeah, and it kind of brings the OA scenes down a little bit. I mean, another thing that brings the OA scenes down a little bit, at least for me, is during those training sequences, it looks like they're just in, like, canyons or something. It doesn't look like a training facility. But when they're flying over Oa, when Tomar Rae and Hal Jordan are flying over Oa, you see all of these like very high tech, like futuristic looking buildings, and like all this like really cool alien technology. And it's like, man, I want them to fly in there. I want to see what this stuff is all about. This looks cool. But every time they land on Oa, it's like, why is everything made of rocks? I thought this place was supposed to be like technologically advanced, but everything looks like it's just made of. It's like we're in the freaking Stone Age. What is this? Flintstones?
Yeah, yeah. It's like you said, and I think we both had said this, that the time on Oa should have been longer and there should have been more of it, not just the training montage. I mean, the training montage should have been like in some sort of, like you said, not out in the middle of some rocky plateau or some crap, but in a facility somewhere on Oa, you know, and where there's other, maybe have other Guardians watching, you know, and other lanterns kind of watching these new raw recruits go through the trials of training, you know, but and
it's also where we should have seen, like I was talking about in the first half, where we should have seen the reveal of like Sinestro knows more about what happened to Abin Sur and more about the Manhunter than he was letting on.
Yeah.
Start to have that slow reveal that he's not planning to like attack Oa or anything, but he's discovered something that could be like this massive cover up. Like, and we need to see that tension between him and the Guardians. Like he knows they're hiding something, knows they're not telling him something. They've been hiding it for a long, long time, and they're deathly afraid of what happens if the Lanterns ever learn the truth about it.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
I mean,
I will say this, that they did show a lot of, you know, when we see the, like a splash page of all the Guardians, or not the Guardians, but the Lanterns in a lot of the books, you know, there's always those typical weird alien lanterns we see, like the crystal ball looking one, you know, the dude, and then, you know, the one that's basically a head with two little stubby arms, you know, we see those. We even saw Chip, or what I thought was Chip. You know, we saw the little squirrel lantern.
We saw Buzz.
I'm like, Buzz, that's right.
We saw Buzz of all the lanterns that we were going to see. And we saw Stell. Like, Stell is in the movie.
Yeah, Stell, who's a robotic, or, you know, he's a robot race, basically.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, that was one thing that I thought it was a nice, cool thing that they did in the movie, was you saw all those cameos of all these different lanterns. And I do believe we kind of saw, if I'm remembering right, we saw a lantern who might have been Salak. But not really. It might not have been, though, because I don't remember it having multiple arms. But anyway, it was.
And
just,
I don't think we saw Aresia either. I don't think Aresia was in it.
No, you didn't. Like, she was definitely not in the movie. I mean, there are a lot of lanterns who aren't in the movie, but there are a ton who were, like some very like classic Green Lanterns, and even some more modern ones. Just as like little flash in the pan cameo stuff.
Yeah.
And I loved that part. I was a big fan of them doing that, because it's like, okay, cool. You're acknowledging that there are a lot of Green Lanterns out there that we're probably not going to spend any time on building up, but we can at least acknowledge that they exist in this universe.
Yeah.
Speaking of things that exist in this universe and where you can actually tell they were definitely trying to kick this off into a larger universe, and they hoped that this would be the beginning of it. Amanda Waller shows up in this movie.
Yeah.
Played by Angela Bassett, which was actually very just hot damn good casting.
Yeah. Yeah. She was good.
When I heard that, I was like, Angela Bassett is Amanda Waller? My dream come true. Like, that's freaking amazing. And then you see her role in the movie, and you're like, oh, one more thing they managed to screw up. Well,
yeah.
What are you going to do? She's there in this government facility with Hector Hammond, studying the dead alien, who is Abin Sur. And I'm like, this doesn't really seem like a job for the Suicide Squad, Amanda. This doesn't really feel like a place where you necessarily belong. I mean, it's cool that you're here. It's cool that they're trying to build you out, I guess. But it's one of those things where they definitely shoehorn that in. And it's yet one more thing that this movie didn't necessarily need. Because they're trying to build this big, I guess they're trying to acknowledge that there's a much bigger universe, and we're totally going to make an interconnected DCU. But it's, again, like this movie has a bad habit of doing, too much too soon. And I'm sitting over here like, yeah, they got to calm this down.
Yeah.
I was excited that Amanda Waller was there. I was like, okay, that's cool. We're going to get a larger DC movie universe. But this is not the route to go.
No.
Like, if you wanted to have somebody else from the DCU make an appearance here to acknowledge a larger universe, maybe Maxwell Lord?
Yeah.
Maybe that could have been an interesting thing. Another telepath? Or someone who's interested in the telepathic powers that Hector Hammond has gotten? That could have been a way of opening up the universe a little bit if you actually had to have somebody else there. I don't think you do. I think that, hey, if you wanted to make this movie to where it could spin off into a larger universe, fine, have that. But you don't actually have to do it all in one movie. And it kind of feels like Warner Brothers has not necessarily learned that lesson yet. Because despite the fact that I will defend the extended cut of Batman v Superman all day long, because it is actually a pretty good movie if you watch it in that context.
Yeah.
But again, I I can't acknowledge that movie's flaws, and the biggest one it has is that they tried to cram so much into that movie because you can tell they're in a damned hurry to get to Justice League.
Yeah.
And it's like, guys, pump the brakes a little bit. It won't kill you. I mean, you don't have to slow all the way down, but you could slow down a little. And it would help you to flesh out your universe a little bit and give people time to actually connect to these characters. Because like we said at the beginning, the whole problem with Green Lantern, and I think the biggest problem that Warner Brothers has with a lot of its current superhero films or its DC film slate is that they're so concentrated on getting so much plot covered in such a short amount of time that they've lost their characters. They're not fleshing their characters out and defining them in ways that a lot of fans can recognize.
Yeah.
Because it's like, oh, we're in such a hurry to get to this point, and it's like, you don't have to do that. I know that fans are clamoring on the internet. We hear it all the time. They're like, man, I hope we see this in the movie, or I hope we see this in the movie. And it's like, stop, Warner Brothers, stop listening to what those people are putting on Twitter. And just get people to write solid, straightforward superhero films. Are some people always going to be disappointed in them? Yes, absolutely they are. There's no pleasing everybody. But if you keep trying to get to every plot point that people want to see acknowledged in the movie, you're going to wind up pleasing nobody. And Green Lantern is a textbook case of how wrong you can go. And that's the final word I have on how screwed up this movie became. Not that it's all bad. There are enjoyable moments, and sadly, none of it's really in the action department. Isn't that kind of weird that here's an action movie, and yet the action parts of the movie might actually be some of the most dull points of the film?
Yeah.
What was your take on the action? Like, when you see, let's focus on probably the biggest one and probably the one that comes closest to being the most entertaining, and that's the Hal Jordan versus Parallax at the end. What was your take on that?
You know, to be honest, that to me was a very lackluster fight. You know, I mean, I get him projecting, you know, fighter jets and, you know, fighting Parallax, but to me, again, I have to go back to my whole thing about Parallax. Parallax in the film bothered me so much that it really took me out of the whole the point of being able to enjoy maybe the action scenes, because the whole time I'm thinking Parallax shouldn't be in this. This is a waste of time. Parallax shouldn't be in this. Oh my God, this film is not as good. It's not. I can't. You know, I'm seizing up during watching this film while I was watching this film, because I literally was just like, Parallax shouldn't be in this. Parallax shouldn't be in this. That just became my mantra, you know, and it bothered me so bad that, you know, cause I was like, Hector Hammond, this should be a fight between him and Hector, and Hector's already been, no, you know, I wanted to kind of curl up in a ball and just stop even watching the film, because it really just disappointed me so bad, you know?
Yep. That's how I felt watching that last action sequence. Cause it's like, Hal Jordan fighting a big old diarrhea cloud and
with only maybe half a day's training.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, he spent no time training with that ring. It was like, okay, he's on Oa, he's training. 5 minutes later, back to Earth we go, back to boredom, back to the dullness. Yep. And it's like, oh my God, why do I care? Like, that is just absolutely frustrating. Like, there's so much that could have been, and we were just not treated to it. And I think that, you know, I lay a lot of it at the feet of the writers and the director, and I think this is going to be disheartening to a lot of people. Two of the writers on this film are the two guys that created the CWDC television universe, the Arrow, Flash, Legends of Tomorrow, and Supergirl, Greg Berlanti and Mark Guggenheim. Yep. Their names are on this Green Lantern movie as not just writers, producer. Producer. Guys who were, like, in charge of shepherding this thing. Yeah, Martin Campbell, the director of the film, deserves a lot of credit for how shitty this turned out. But I hear a lot of people saying all the time, well, why don't they just turn the DC film universe over to the guys who do the DC TV? And I'm like, nope, they had their chance. Screwed that one up.
To me, it's like they at least they learned something from the film. If anything good came out of it, they had to have learned something because their TV lineup has been spot on.
It has. It's been very good, but I think TV is a different animal than film.
It is.
And maybe they're better, like, the way they tell their stories, clearly they're better suited for television. They've done a great job over on TV. I just don't think that they're the right guys to try and handle a movie universe. I feel like television is their bread and butter. Like, that's where they need to be, and they're doing a good job. Now, Martin Campbell, he was the wrong guy to pick to direct this movie. I mean,
I don't know a whole lot about him, so you definitely know. So
we've already, like, said that, of course, he gave us, you know, two Bond films and at least one good Zorro movie. I get it. He's a guy that they probably looked at and said, okay, he knows how to direct an action movie. This guy could work, right? And I'm sure he enjoyed the paycheck. I'm sure they promised him a good bit of money. And considering how hard Green Lantern flopped at the box office, yeah, I hope he wasn't, like, counting on the profits of the movie to help supplement his income. I hope he got paid up front. But that aside, he just straight up was the wrong guy. He shouldn't have been the director. And I think that there are other directors out there who could have done the movie. And this is going to be easy to say in hindsight, because this movie that the guy I'm thinking of directed, it was a good sci-fi action movie called Edge of Tomorrow, came out way later than Green Lantern. It came out a few years later. But that would be Doug Liman. And up to that point, Doug Liman hadn't really done, like, sci-fi films, but he has done action movies before. He directed the first Bourne movie. He directed The Bourne Identity. And then he went on to do the Tom Cruise movie, Edge of Tomorrow. And currently he's signed to do Justice League Dark, so we may see him in the DC EU yet, if that movie does actually wind up happening. But it's been in development hell for so long, and, you know, was originally a Guillermo del Toro project. Kinda wondering if that's really going to go forward. But we'll talk about that on a later podcast. This one, I really think that Doug Liman would have been more passionate about the project. He's a comic book fan. He's somebody that I think would have tackled this in a really cool way. And his visual style, just especially if you go watch Edge of Tomorrow, you can really see that he would have focused in on character, and just he would have made a better movie overall than what Martin Campbell did. So, big missed opportunity there for me. And he's a guy that would have been available to do it too, because, I mean, in a perfect world, somebody like Joss Whedon or J.J. Abrams taking on a Green Lantern movie, yeah, we'd all love to see that. But the fact of the matter is, they're pretty tied up with other franchises. And in 2011, they were already tied up pretty heavily in other franchises at rival movie studios. So
yeah,
there was, like, no chance they were going to even touch this project. Mm-hmm. But like I said, perfect world. It would have been great to see them jump ship and be like, you know what? screw Disney and screw Marvel. I'm going to go over here to DC and Warner Brothers, and I'm going to make me a Green Lantern movie, and it's going to be great. You know what? It probably would have been.
Yeah. Probably.
Kelly, if you could have picked anybody, any one director to take this project on, who would you have picked to direct this movie? I've said my pick.
Werner Herzog. I'm kidding. Werner Herzog would never do a superhero film. I think Zack Snyder would have been a good pick because he's good with visuals and he's good with character development, especially, with an ensemble cast with Watchmen.
Yeah.
I walked out of the film feeling like each character got a little bit of screen time and got a little bit of who they were,
It'll be that's a controversial pick for some of our listeners, but you know what? I kind of see what you're saying. I get it.
I mean,
and you can't deny that a lot of people said that the best part of Man of Steel was the stuff on Krypton.
Right. And, Zack Snyder would have been 100% better if he had done the film, we'd probably be talking about different things. But instead, they gave it to this other dude and the film's just a mess. Zack Snyder, at least, I think the film would have been at least somewhat coherent and not just a huge fucking pile, anything would have been better than what we had. I think as far as directors go, and I don't know a lot of directors, I just know certain ones and I've seen what Zack Snyder can do. And that's kind of who I just had to pull from because I don't know. I mean, I'm sure there are better ones. Josh Whedon, I think if he wasn't attached to, the Marvel franchise, he would have been a good pick. He's good at what he does, that's who my pick would have been.
And that's I'm not against that. I think that Zack Snyder might have been a really interesting choice. And from a visual perspective, he probably would have really jazzed that up. But
we would have seen Oa the way we wanted to see Oa. It was pretty in the film that they put out, but we would have gone to those places in Oa. We wouldn't have just flown over them,
Yeah, I kind of agree. I can see that. I can absolutely see that. I could see that really working. I think that the visual style would have been pretty spot on. I don't think anybody would have had any complaints about how it looked. I think if there's one thing that all Green Lantern fans can agree on, I think everybody can agree on this point, is that the writer of this movie should have been Geoff Johns.
Yes, 100%.
He should have been the guy, script supervisor, story supervisor.
Yep.
Lead writer. I'm not saying he should be the only writer on the film because maybe he didn't have full experience writing screenplays, because that's different than comic book writing, and it's a totally different animal. And he would definitely need some help in there. But as far as story and script supervision, he should have been the guy.
Yep. They should have said, okay, Jeff, we want you to do the script for Green Lantern. We've got a few people that we're going to attach to it to work with you. We're going to give you this flamethrower, and we want you to take the other script, and we want you to fucking burn it.
Yeah.
And just this building over here has all the four – four of the scripts, the rewrites, just go ahead and torch the whole motherfucker down and then just go ahead and write a new one. And here's the people that are going to help you.
It probably wouldn't have taken him very long either, because he could have just been I wrote this Green Lantern Secret Origin thing.
Yeah, I'll just
– Let's modify a little piece here, a little piece there, and we're done.
Yep.
you don't want to put Atrocitus in the movie? That's cool. You don't have to. Atrocitus is a bit of a stretch for some folks. You don't want to put all this stuff about the prophecy of the Blackest Night in the movie? Okay, fine.
We could do that in this. We could do that in the second film. We could break this down.
Save it for the third film if you like. Don't even bring it up. Like it's just one of those concepts that you could get to if you like, or you could just say, why not? Why don't we just leave that over here? And we'll build towards like a Sinestro Corps war in the third movie, because in my mind, the trilogy goes kind of like Star Wars. You see Hal at the beginning, you build him up as the Green Lantern, show him and Sinestro kind of sort of being friends and like having a nice begrudging respect at the end. In the sequel, you actually have them working directly together as you begin Sinestro's like slow turn towards being evil at like maybe the halfway point of the second act. And flip him, have him like gone full renegade, so that Hal basically has to hunt him down through the second half of the movie. And in the third film, you go full on Sinestro Corps war, like where Sinestro has recruited his army, and we finally have the big, you know, blow up, have it out at the end. And that's your Green Lantern trilogy all in a nutshell. It's not incredibly difficult, but I think it would have worked out a lot better for everybody if that's the direction they would have gone. And it certainly would have focused things a little bit more and given the audience more time to understand the concept of, you know, willpower focused as a weapon. I mean, they just have to portray it like it's the Force in Star Wars. I mean, people accepted that pretty quickly. It's an energy field, like you just think of emotions as an energy field. And if human beings only understood the possibilities of all that power, there's no limit to what they could accomplish.
Yeah.
But that's where we are in that film. And I think we're both on the same page here. And I think a lot of people are that, you know, the blueprint for your movie is Green Lantern Secret Origin. If you just take that concept and, like we were saying, Geoff Johns would have been the key to making that movie work. But glorified story consultant, honestly. Like, his name gets credited in the movie, but even he, by his own admission, didn't have much of a role. And he talked to the actors here and there, but that was it. I mean, what else?
Yeah.
What else can he do? I mean, he had no power at that point. But he's got power now. He's the co-head of DC Films. And we're about to see how that's going to work out in just a few short months.
Yeah, I mean, probably at this point, as an afterthought, he's probably glad he's not too connected to that film in its entirety. But, I mean, had he been, you know...
I felt so bad for that guy.
I feel like had he been at the helm and with assistance, like you said, I mean, because I understand, you know, him not doing a whole lot of feature films, he needs some assistance, but the film would have been so much better to some degree and maybe even be a hit and maybe would have been the launching pad DC wanted for their universe.
That's what we all wanted too. We all want a Green Lantern to be like that movie that kicked off the DC interconnected film universe. I mean, what a trip that would have been for us too. You know, like they didn't kick it off with Superman. They didn't kick it off with Batman. Hell, they didn't even kick it off with Wonder Woman. Kicked it off with Green Lantern. I mean, that would have been, you know, another success story like what Disney, or not Disney, but what Marvel Studios did with Iron Man. Because when you remember when Iron Man came out in 2008, he was kind of a C-D-lister character, honestly. Like, he wasn't popular. He wasn't a huge, like, massive Marvel character that everybody was just clamoring for a movie from. And when that movie came out, it flipped that switch overnight, and suddenly he went from the D-list to the A-list. And Iron Man has been there ever since. So I get the thinking on Green Lantern. They were like, you know what? We could take this character who's had a really popular comic these last few years, and we could take him out of comic book obscurity and put him all the way at the tippy top of the mountain. And now after that movie, we're all kind of worried that he's never going to fully recover.
Yeah.
And folks, I think we should mention this because you can tell there was a full court press to put Green Lantern out front when this movie came out, because they had a huge toy line and they created a Bruce Timm produced animated series. And that series was great. It was exactly what we wanted to see out of a Green Lantern animated show. It did everything the movie got wrong, the TV show got right. And it was like, this is amazing. This is what we want to see. And you know what really made me sad rewatching the Green Lantern movie, Kelly? Mm-hmm. There's an ad for the animated series on it. As I was watching this, I was like, this is simultaneously the best and worst part of this experience. Being reminded that this was a thing that they were trying to push when this movie came out.
Yeah.
And I'm just sitting over here just heartbroken because we got a whole season of that and it was fantastic. It just ends.
Mm-hmm.
And there will be no more.
Yep.
And thus ends the sad tale of the 2011 Green Lantern experience.
Yeah. Did we want to end off this with at least talking about who we thought would have been a better pick than Ron Reynolds, or do we even want to go there?
I personally won't go there because I feel like Ryan was the best pick at the time.
Yeah. Yeah. That's fine because, you know, I had to not so much defend Ryan Reynolds to my customers because everybody wanted to hate on him the entire time when I had my shop. That was the one thing. It was like, oh, so what do you think about Ron Van Wilder being, you know, super Green Lantern? And I was like, I can't tell you because I haven't seen it yet. And I want to give him the benefit of any doubt, you know, and like anything, like any actor, he's only going to be what the script calls for. He can only do what the script tells him to do, you know, so I thought he did the best with what he was, you know, given.
Yeah, nobody could have done that better.
No.
In my view, like I look at the material they had to work with. I'm like, yeah, nobody was going to make this. It doesn't matter how much you polish this. A turd is still a turd.
Yep.
And yep. It doesn't matter who you have polishing it. It's still going to turn out the same way. And
yep. You could put sauce on it. It's still a turd.
Yeah. It's just it's a slightly tomato-y turd. Yeah. And that's all it was. That's all it ever could have been with what we were given, with what the actors were presented with. There was just no hope that this was ever going to turn out well. And I do remember when the movie was coming out, watching the trailers, which were all actually very good. It had me like super hyped for the movie. Even though I still had reservations about a CGI costume, I was like, you know, maybe it'll look better on the big screen and in action. And to an extent it did. But I remember about a couple of months before the movie came out, we started hearing rumblings that it wasn't good. That the movie was actually going to be terrible. And I tried to write that off and say, it's probably just some old bullshit from somebody who's like a, you know, just a hardcore Marvelite. They don't want to believe. They don't want to give the movie any credit. But I remember the day of the movie, like 2 days before the movie came out, the embargo on reviews lifted, and boy, were they bad. ran the movie down. Now, some of the reviews I read were some straight bullshit because they were hating on the very concept of Green Lantern. I remember reading one review. I don't remember where it came from, but I remember reading one that just pissed me right off because it wasn't ripping the movie. It called Kilowog an unfortunately named character. And I was like, right there, this reviewer has lost me. Because they're not taking the movie as it is and reviewing the film. They're taking the concept itself and ripping it to shreds. And like, it's fine if you don't like the concept. If you are not a fan of this, if you are not someone who enjoys these types of films, maybe you're not the best person to be reviewing it. Now, if you're someone who likes this type of film, who is into these types of concepts, and you go to review it and it turns out that it's bad, your word carries more weight with me.
Yeah. Yeah.
And your word makes more sense because it's like you have experience in enjoying these things and knowing how to enjoy them. But if you walked away from this unable to like it, unable to find the positive in it, then there is a good solid chance that this movie is a turd. And unfortunately, a lot of people who have that voice, who have that experience and that point of view, they walked out of there saying a lot of the same things that this this jackass who doesn't understand that Kilowog is a pre-existing character did. I mean, I really felt like that guy didn't know that Green Lantern was a comic book. He was like, or maybe that Kilowog was a character created for the movie. And I'm like, no. Long history of that character, and he's great. But
Yeah. I really hate when non-comic book critics come in with their two cents, and really they should take those two cents and shove them up their ass because they don't have any, they don't know anything. Do some fucking research. You're a critic. That's part of your job. You know, don't just shit on something. Because, oh, what a, sorry, it's the alcohol talking.
That's, you know what? I think that's just honesty. It's just honesty. It's like we're tired of critics who come into these movies they're preordained to shit on it, and they have no interest in just getting lost in the concept or just, you know, suspending their disbelief for a little while and just having, you know, at least attempting to have a good time. Now, I can understand if you went into Green Lantern, you suspended all disbelief, watched this movie, and you still walked out disappointed. I can't blame you there because it's just a straight up bad movie. It doesn't tell its story well. So structurally speaking, you can rip this movie a new one. As far as like presentation, like the overall look of the film, I can also see why you wouldn't dig it. Like, cause I don't think it looks all that great. Going back and just watching it again, I'm like, there are times in the movie where it's so painfully obvious that they're standing next to a green screen that it takes me right out of the film.
Well, it's just like the prequels to Star Wars, you know, because 99% of them were done, you know, green screen. And it takes you out of the film. You know, you need real aesthetic, tangible props to make a film feel like it's real.
I agree.
You know, the Millennium Falcon needs to be something tangible that you can hit and touch and not just be something that somebody created on their computer. Now, don't get me wrong. I mean, computer graphics and CGI done respectively and properly are great and they add to the film. But when it's all of the film, no. I mean, that's, like I said, the costumes being CGI, fucking just lazy bullshit.
There's even a point, there's a point in Green Lantern when the scene where Hal goes to confront the Guardians and to get their help in saving his planet from Parallax. As he's landing, his head doesn't quite keep up with the suit. And it looks really bad.
Yeah.
I was taken completely out of the film at that point. It was like, oh God, this is X-Men Origins all over again. The first time Wolverine pops his adamantium claws. It's like, oh God, I popped my claws, but my hands over here and the claws are like a full inch and a half away from them. And they don't keep up with each other. Oh my God, who thought that this looked good enough to get out of the editing room?
Why?
It's like, this is where we are. Somebody thought that, you can tell that was rushed. They were in a hurry to get that done. They were like, oh shit, we're on deadline. We got to get this movie out and put it in the can and poop this one out because it's a superhero movie. With
No, keep it in the can. Keep it in the can.
Put it in a different can and hit the flush.
And I hate to say this as we kind of come to a close, but the best thing about the film to me and what I look forward to and what I really enjoyed, to kind of put this in perspective and to let everybody know that the best thing about the film was the end. The credits rolling. That to me was the best part of the film, because then I could get up and leave and find some corner to curl up and cry in.
As we all did at some point later when we realized just how terrible that movie was.
Yeah, you have to go through some denial. And you know,
you do.
Even myself, I was trying to kind of tell myself, yeah, it was, I did the same thing with the first Star Wars, the Star Wars prequels, the first, the Phantom Menace. I came out thinking, yeah, that was the best film in the world. I loved it. Yeah. Then I rewatched it like 3 months later when it came on DVD. And I literally was like, what the hell did I just watch? This is fucking horrible. This is garbage. Who are the fuck is a Trade Federation? Why did they have a blockade on Naboo? I don't understand any of this shit.
It's that thing. Time and perspective will change your view.
It'll knock you the fuck out and make you go, you're in denial, bitch.
Yeah.
You were in denial.
I was in denial about the theatrical cut of Batman v Superman. So, just like I was in denial about Green Lantern. Like, these are not good movies. I mean, at least I didn't go into denial about Suicide Squad. I knew that was a piece of shit the first time I watched it.
The only thing, like, I meh, that's all I could say about it. I mean, I think on a more, now that I've had more time to think about it, I could probably go, yeah, it's a piece of shit. But initially when I walked out, I didn't give it any praise. I didn't give it any, I didn't highlight anything. I was just like, it's a film,
But yeah, that was my, I remember leaving Green Lantern, and like I had my Green Lantern shirt on. I had a ring on my hand. Like, I was totally nerding out this whole movie, as several of us did. And there was this kid who was leaving the movie, and as it was over, he was like, well, what'd you think, man? Was it good? Like, he seemed to be hyped. He seemed to have enjoyed himself. But I knew then that what I had just seen was not what I wanted. And all I could muster was, it was okay. And even then, I knew I was lying to myself. I was lying to him, and I was lying to myself. And, after all these years, it feels good to be able to say, look, Green Lantern was an absolute terrible film, and even worse than that, crushingly dull, boring to the point of like making a movie less, like, that doesn't even reach the 2 hour mark feel like it's over 2.5. But on that note, folks, we have ripped that movie a new one. We have said what we thought would have made it better, and we have rebooked the Green Lantern 2011 film. And we hope you guys enjoyed yourselves. I mean, we certainly enjoyed drinking during this this revisit of a terrible movie.
I'll say that.
But next time we're going to be talking about a different Green Lantern film, one that doesn't exist yet, and that will be Green Lantern Corps, currently scheduled for 2020. And basically, what we're going to be doing is, we're going to be kind of fan casting it, if you will. Not just fan casting, but picking out who we think would be a good director, what kind of story we hope they tell, how it could possibly tie into the larger DCEU. And I will, in fact, have a somewhat unique situation to describe to you to make some fans happy, and I think be a little controversial for others, because I had this idea on how Chris Pine, a guy that we all kind of hoped would be Hal Jordan, could conceivably still do it, even though he is also playing Steve Trevor in the Wonder Woman film. How is this possible? you will have to come back for the next episode of Seller's Points to find out. And I promise you, I will go into enough detail to either make your little fanboy hearts, you know, leap with joy, or your heads explode and you type out an angry ass tweet to send to me to tell me just how stupid I really am. And I'm going to make that easy for you to do, because if you want to find me on Twitter, you can follow me at Russell, R-U-S-S-E-L-L underscore Sellers, S-E-L-L-E-R-S. And you can tell me all about how wrong I am about everything. Hell, tell me how wrong I am about the Green Lantern movie. I mean, I'm not, but you can tell me. You can totally tell me. You can tweet at Kelly, too. Kelly, I believe they find you at HKP2814, correct?
Yes.
Yes. They will find you on Twitter. You can send us all your, you know, your experiences with the Green Lantern film. We'd love to hear it. We'd love to hear your take. What you think would have made the Green Lantern movie better. And try to be a little more creative than just don't make it or let somebody else write it. Yeah, we get that. But come on, give us some ideas, guys. Like, throw something out there. We know that you guys have ideas on what would have made that movie better, what would have made it work. And again, like we said here, try to be not so lazy as to say just recasting Ryan Reynolds, because come on, that doesn't change a thing.
No.
Now, so hit us up, Twitter. Come find us on the Facebook group. You can find us on the Place to Be Nation Comics group on Facebook. It's an open group. It's public. Come on in. We'd love to hear from you. And while you're there, you can check out some of the other great comics podcasts like Hard Traveling Fanboys. You can check out Imaginary Stories. You can check out Todd Weber's Conversation, which he's got a great series going on right now exploring the John Byrne and Chris Claremont X-Men era with our good friend Tim Capel. I highly encourage you to go and check that one out. It's been one of my absolute favorite series on the Place to Be Nation pop feed. Check out the other podcasts like Geek and Sassy, our friends Jenny and Miranda. And Miranda will tell you all about how mean I am for saying my favorite phrase, hashtag Gotham sucks, because it still does. And I'm never apologizing for that. But don't worry, Miranda. I am going to send you some Justice League versus Suicide Squad comics, so maybe you won't be too mad at your big brother for too long. But anyway, guys, that's going to bring us to the end of another edition of Seller's Points. We thank you very much for joining us. And Kelly, anything you want to say to the people as we leave?
No, I'm good. No, really. Thank you, everybody, for listening. And just, you know, again, if you have anything you want to tell us, like Russell said, just, you know, let us know. Let us know.
Yeah, hit us up. We are also open to suggestions. We love hearing from you guys. And on that note, we will catch you guys next time. See you later.
Sure, I think about you now and then, but it's been a long, long time. I've got a good life now, and I moved on. So when you cross my mind, I try not to think about what might have been, 'cause that was then, and we have taken different roads. We can't go back again, there's no use giving in, and there's no way to know what might have. Talk about this all night long and wonder why we didn't last. You
guess they might be the best days we will ever know. But we'll have to leave them in the past. So try not to think about what might have been, 'cause that was then, and we have taken different roads. Can't go back again. There's no use giving in, and there's no way to know what might have been. The same old look. Taken there.